Water. Water. Oh.
Tyler, I told you to bring extra water. Here, drink up. It's the desert episode of PMK. Vanessa goes on a dangerous snake hunt.
Yep, that's a rattlesnake. Let's just stand back a couple feet.
Just going sideways. Whoa.
Come on, Vanessa.
Then she boards down one of the world's tallest dunes.
That was steep, that was fast, that was cool.
And I gear up for some off-road racing, desert style.
Okay, so you're sure we're not gonna crash or anything, right?
Plus, Charlie shows us how to find a drink in the desert.
Man, I could get used to this.
It's Popular Mechanics for Kids. Fun in the desert.
In the desert, you're gonna have to change.
You're right.
No, I mean, you gotta stop running around like that.
Oh.
Deserts can get up to 55 degrees Celsius. That's 130 degrees Fahrenheit. In that kind of heat, you have to conserve your energy. What are you doing?
Geez, I know I haven't been working out lately, but I didn't think it was that bad.
No, it's just the desert sun is incredibly powerful, and it's easy to get sunburnt or even sunstroke. To protect themselves, a lot of desert creatures only come out at night. Like the snakes Vanessa's about to hunt.
I'm in the Sonoran Desert in Arizona. Looks like nothing lives here, but there's a lot. The desert crawls and slithers with creatures, especially snakes. You just don't see them during the day because it's too hot. So hot, the snakes could die. But at night, after the desert cools down, it's a whole other story. I'm going on a snake hunt with Brian Sterrett. He's a herpetologist. He studies snakes and collects them for zoos.
We're gonna grab some special tools, Vanessa. We're looking for rattlesnakes. They're venomous. In fact, they release a poison so strong it can kill. So strong it can kill. So we use things like tongs for grabbing a snake like this very gently, but it doesn't hurt, or forceps for little rattlesnakes.
Now, is that far enough away from
us? Oh yeah, that's far enough away. We have to be careful though. Let's go look for some rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes kill their food with their venom. See? Their fangs are hollow inside, so they inject the venom through their teeth, just like a hypodermic needle. It's pitch black outside. You can hardly see. And some of the snakes are poisonous.
Gets that way at night.
I think I see something.
Yep, that's a rattlesnake. Stick with me and let's go check it out. It's a small rattlesnake, so we're going to use forceps. Just stand back a couple feet and we'll be just fine.
All right. Oh, I see his head.
Yeah. It's a little sidewinder.
Even though he's little, he's still very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The rattlesnake's color and design helps it to blend in with the desert.
Rattlesnakes are not large reptiles, and this is the average size of most rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes get their name from the rattles at the end of their tail. The rattles are made of these little sections. Sections get added as the snake grows. They're hollow inside, and when they rub together, that's what makes the rattling noise. Since rattlesnakes don't move very fast, they shake their tails to tell predators to move away, like foxes or owls. She's doing it right now. She's going sideways.
Whoa! That's a sidewinder.
So have you ever been bitten by a snake?
Well, a friend of mine was bitten, and he ended up in the hospital in intensive care for 3 days. His hand was real sore, I'll tell you. So it probably wouldn't kill you, but it'll sure make you hurt a while. Got to be real careful. Hey, check this out, Vanessa.
What is it?
That's a rosy boa.
A boa, they're not venomous. Boas kill their prey by suffocating them.
That means they squeeze their dinner to death.
So is it safe to pick him up?
It's safe to pick up. That's a non-venomous snake. All snakes have teeth, but I don't think that one's going to bite you.
Cool. He's so cool. Since this is for PMK and not for the zoo, I think I'm going to let you go. All right?
That would make Anakin Skywalker proud. That's later on PMK.
Look around you. What do you see? Nothing. For miles and miles. This is the biggest desert we know of. It's the planet Mars. The entire planet looks like this. But one difference between this place and any desert on Earth, no animals live here. That we know of.
Sand is sand is sand, right? Wrong. Just have a look through our microscope. Each type of sand has a signature as unique as a fingerprint. Look at this one. The clear grains are made of quartz. The white ones are pieces of seashells. You can even tell where sand comes from by what it looks like. This sand is from Connecticut, and this is from California. An expert can tell the difference. Look at the California grains. They're smooth. The ones from Connecticut are rough. Most sand begins as rock. Over millions of years, wind and rain wear away at the rock, creating tiny specks we call sand.
When I was growing up, Dad used to always tell me, these are some of the tallest sand dunes on the continent. Never climb one alone. So what did I do instead? I decided to go down one. On a board!
Nice try, Vanessa.
This is Josh. He's the U.S. National Sandboarding Champion, and he's gonna teach me how to carve dunes. Like grabbing stale fish.
Grabbing stale fish is when you grab the board at the back end, like grabbing a fish by the tail.
Well, we're not there yet, so why don't we work our way up and go up to the top?
It's 100 degrees, 38 Celsius. That's way too hot to climb up a steep dune like that. So we're going up in the fastest ski lift in the world, the sand rail. Holy moly! That was steep, that was fast, that was cool!
All right, Vanessa, what we're gonna do now is we're gonna work on some straight runs. What we're gonna wanna be doing is leaning on our back foot to keep our nose up, just get the air underneath the board between the sand. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Sandboarding is much harder to learn than snowboarding. On snow, you can go slow and keep sliding with balance and control.
There you go.
It's not the same with sand because there's so much more friction.
To slide at all, the desert sand has to be very dry and powdery. It's good for landings, too.
keep your balance.
As the bottom of the board slides over the sand grains rub against it. This rubbing is called friction. Friction is what slows you down.
So to have control on the sand, you actually have to go faster.
At about 10 to 15 miles an hour, you hit the breakaway point and you get a little speed going.
The faster speed gives a little layer of air between the board and the sand. That's when you really begin to slide, because there's very little friction.
The bottom of my board is made from Formica. That's the same thing kitchen counters are made from. Only you wouldn't want to eat off of this.
Waxing the board makes it slide more smoothly over the sand. That helps sandboarders reach speeds of 50 miles or 90 kilometers per hour. Those are highway speeds.
Think of your legs being as a big shock, a big spring. And it's going to absorb everything you run over. Okay?
Okay.
You ready to try it?
Yeah.
All right, let's go. That's good. A little more of that and you'll be on the National Sandboard League.
Yeah, right. This has been a lot of fun, but I think I need a long shower and maybe some Q-tips.
These are waves. And these are waves. Sand dunes are slow motion waves. They need three things to form. Lots of sand, wind power, and something to get them started. Even an anthill will do. Sand grains blow over the top of the dune and roll down the other side. They pile up on the bottom. Dunes can grow to be as tall as a five-story building. Sand dunes can move the length of a city block every year. Slow. But if the wind stays pretty much the same direction over the years, sand dunes can cover up an entire forest.
Hi. You're lost in the desert. You've been separated from your guide. Your cell phone battery is dead. Even your camel has blown you up. And you are so, so thirsty. What are you gonna do? I'm just so stupid. Oh.
Did you know that in 100 degree or more desert temperatures, a person can only survive for 3 days without water?
Luckily, I've only been out for 3 hours, but I could really use a drink. I'm getting dehydrated. Do you know what happens when you get dehydrated?
Headaches, muscle cramps, dizziness, nausea, and total irrationality of the mind, man.
Wouldn't it be nice to know how to collect water to drink in case of an emergency?
You really only need two things to suck pure drinkable water right out of the ground. Something to catch the water with, and a magic piece of plastic. It's a good thing I don't litter. This is for my lunch. Bologna! And coincidentally, it happens to be the right size. About 2 meters by 2 meters. Now the sun will heat the ground through the plastic. That'll make the moisture in the soil evaporate. The moisture will rise and condense on the underside of the plastic. It's called the greenhouse effect. First, you have to dig a hole, and you can use whatever you've got to help. The pit should be about 4 feet wide and 3 feet deep. That's a little over a meter wide and 1 meter deep. In the middle of the pit, I'll dig another small hole for the water container. Ah, there. Now I need to make the bottle opening bigger. Woo-hoo! Then take the plastic wrap and cover the pit. It shouldn't touch the bottom. Then find a small rock and place it in the middle of the sheet, making the sides slope down. That'll make the water that collects run toward the center and drip right into the container. I want to keep any moisture from escaping by sealing the edges. It takes about an hour to build this and about 2 hours for the sun to do its job. But hey, this is TV, so we get to peek now.
Ooh.
It may not look like much yet, but this makes enough water to fill that bottle every day, which is enough to save your life. Man, am I thirsty.
Man, I could get used to this.
What's a mirage? Imagine you're lost in the desert. The hot sun's beating down on you like a fiery fist. But then, off in the distance, you see water. But there's no water. So what was that? A mirage, an optical illusion. Here's how it works. Whenever you get a layer of air that's much hotter or cooler than the air above it, the part where they meet acts like a mirror. So, say you're looking at the desert on a hot day. Because this air acts like a mirror, you're also going to see a reflection of the sky. This'll look like the sky is sitting in the middle of the sand. And this patch of blue looks like water.
Cool.
And if you've ever stood on a road on a really hot day, you can probably see a mirage yourself. However, mirages shouldn't be the only thing you should look out for. If you're standing on a road.
Ow. Why go round and round on a tiny track when you can race across the desert? This is the Baja 500. In off-road racing, these specially designed cars and trucks rocket along an 80-kilometer-long course through the desert. Unlike a flat, carefully maintained Formula One track, these roads are full of bumps to fly over, sandy pits to get stuck in, and every other problem a desert road can throw at you. And don't forget the blistering desert heat. These races are for tough cars and tough drivers. This is the Mojave Desert. It's huge and quiet. Unless there's an off-road race. To win an off-road race, you still have to be the first one to pass the finish line, but this sport's not just about speed. It's more about driving skills and the kind of truck you've got. This is Bill Markell's truck. People from around here call him Flying Bill. Flying Bill is one of the best off-road racers in the world. He's getting ready for a big desert race.
Hey, Tyler, truck's running good, but it needs a few more improvements. Help.
Sure.
I'm helping Flying Bill adjust the shock absorbers.
Normal cars only require one shock per wheel, but for us to be able to go full speed out in the desert, we have to have three.
If there's one thing a desert racing truck needs, it's good shocks.
All right, I'm done.
Good job, Tyler.
So have you ever crashed this thing?
Yeah, we rolled it twice right here in the trails not too long ago, got hit, continued on, won the race. How'd you like to go for a ride and try it out now?
Okay.
Okay, we're not gonna crash or anything, right? No, we should be okay, Tara.
Go for a ride. You can see why shock absorbers are important. The desert is not smooth terrain. The shock absorbers sit between the wheel and the body of the truck. They allow the truck to go faster and make it easier for us to stay in control.
Man, I'm sure glad we're not following anyone. Because if we were, I'd abduct him, I think. But Bill, you wouldn't get that problem. Because his helmet has a fresh air system. It filters the air and pumps it directly through his mouth and nose. Our helmets also have a two-way radio so that the pilot and co-pilot can communicate during the race.
This truck doesn't have any windows because they would get cracked and broken during a race. The webbing in the windows keeps our hands from flying into the truck. And we're both wearing fire-resistant suits. They're absolutely necessary since fire is the number one killer in car racing.
What do you think, Tyler?
I love it.
Well, I don't normally do this, but I would like to drive it once.
Yeah!
Whoa, whoa, slow down.
Whoa!
Slow down, push in the clutch.
Hit the brake. Stop. Whoa. All right, Tyler, you just about rolled my truck.
All right.
But you didn't.
I'm not sure why, but Bill trusted me to continue driving. What makes it hard to keep control are all the bumps. It takes practice to keep the truck going straight.
All right, give us more gas. All right. Right there, how's that? Right there.
And did I tell you we have to deal with wildlife? The law protects any endangered species, and it's crime to run them over, even out here in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but that's just a bug, Tyler. That's not protected under the law.
Yeah, but I'm a nice guy. Is it gone yet?
Yeah, you're clear. Let's go.
All right. Huh? Well, we did it. We survived the desert.
Excuse me?
Did you know that camels can carry up to 1,000 pounds?
Did you also know that they spit at people?
Well, see you next time.
On Popular Mechanics for Kids.